Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back off the bye to the Green 19 podcast. Covering all things Green Bay Packers, I am one of your co-hosts, Jim Ozarski, along with Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PackersNews.com. And Tom, where I'm guessing you went international for the bye, right? You weren't worried about COVID restrictions. You were out and about, you know, south of France, Bahamas.
Yeah. You know, I can't really tell you that, Jim, but let's just say that I'm healthy and all my injuries are healed, and I'm ready for the second half of the season, or I guess it would be the last three-fourths of the season.
Yeah, it is something coming out of this bye, Tom. I mean, it was week five on the calendar, but as we mentioned the last time we were all together on this podcast, I mean, now the Packers, if they go where they want to go, are going to play, what, 15 straight weeks?
Yeah. So, yeah, assuming, you know, there will be a potential bye week if they do well. There may be a bye week anyways if the NFL keeps having games canceled. They might have to add an extra week. So who knows? You know, we might be covering this thing until the end of February. I don't know. We'll have to see how everything plays out.
Yeah, it will be very interesting in that regard. I guess the good news for the Packers was on their short bye week when they had to keep everyone in town. Tom, you know, the Packers had to stay. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But no positive tests, no issues there. You know, Atlanta had a positive test coming in or shortly before they played the Packers. They had one shortly after. You had asked Matt LaFleur about that situation and no fallout for the Packers there. So at least as it looks, Tom, as we record this, they will be going to Tampa Bay on Sunday afternoon in front of a limited capacity. So we'll start with the Packers where, you know, Davante Adams is back. I would guess Kenny Clark is going to play.
You would think so.
Yeah. Rashawn Gary has been practicing. He missed the last game. So where are they coming out of this bye here, Tom?
Well, you know, so there's two ways to look at it, and LaFleur kind of addressed that, which is they had some great momentum coming out of the Atlanta game, and they're scoring at will against teams. Granted, they weren't the best teams ever, but they were putting up monstrous points. And, you know, now they get a defense that has 10 days to study them, and it's a good defense. So I think from a health standpoint, so that's the other side of the coin, is that they got a chance to get healthy and get two of their best players back. So which would you rather have, continuing the momentum or get two of your best players back? Probably get two of your best players back and get them going again. You know, it's just one of those strange things about having an early bye. I always think that it's not a great thing when you have an early bye, but you know, they're healthy, they're rested. There's no reason why they shouldn't come flying out of this. You know, look at Tennessee, didn't practice for almost 2 weeks and they just steamrolled the Bills. So maybe the Packers will be in that boat too.
Honestly, Tom, I mean, I feel offensively, I don't see why the bye would affect them. I think if they're going to come back to earth a little bit, it'll have everything to do with Tampa Bay's defense.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the way the Packers started the year, Tom, with no preseason games, a very truncated training camp. No, I mean, and they came out firing out of that scenario. So I would think you've got an entirely healthy offense. I mean, whatever injury other than Adams, but of course now he's back. So you have an entirely healthy offense with your best skill position player. For me, I think any issues are because it's the Buccaneers, which should be, you know, the best test the Packers have to date.
Yeah. And the Buccaneers have been up and down and injuries have been a part of that. They've had some guys nicked up. Leonard Fournette has been hurt. They were without Chris Godwin, one of their top receivers. Mike Evans has been a little banged up. They're coming into this game a little more healthy, and they should be better on offense than they've been. And that's going to help. It's definitely going to help Tom Brady. It's just, you know, how good can they be? How good are those guys? How ready is Chris Godwin to play a bunch of snaps? You know, and I think that's what it'll come down to. But I do think this is a quality opponent.
Yeah, and a reminder for Packers fans, Chris Godwin, it was part of the, I guess, maybe it wasn't part of the Devontae Adams calculus, but you can put it in there in that Godwin strained a hamstring, tried to play on it, and then re-injured it. And he has been out. So he is back to practice limited on Wednesday. You're right, Tom. I mean, Mike Evans had a toe issue earlier. Now he's dealing with an ankle. I would imagine he's going to go. Same thing with Rob Gronkowski for whatever he's providing at this point. But coming out of, so the Bucs are coming off a mini bye, if you will, playing Thursday night against Chicago. And of course, Tom, the biggest news nationally with this, not so much that the Buccaneers blew a lead and lost to the Bears, but it was that Tom Brady, of all people, forgot how many downs there were in an attempt to try to win the game. What do you – now, that's a one moment. To me, it's inexcusable, even if it was, a rookie quarterback trying to do that drive. But where do you see Tampa Bay at this point, 3-2, and kind of finding their way with a new quarterback and a new offense for that quarterback?
Yeah, I think you hit it really on the head. It's a new offense with a quarterback who's not used to playing that style of football. And I'm going to kind of get into that on my Sunday story about Brady and Rodgers, where they both are at this point. Rodgers is far ahead in that LaFleur offense, and Brady is still playing in a system that doesn't necessarily fit his skills. And you could see that he was just not right. There were plays where he was thrown into coverage instead of finding the open man. And that's what Brady has done his whole career, is find the open guy and just move the chains. And here it looked like he was trying to force balls into, guys down the field. And then, I think there's so much difference in how you do these, how you run these offenses, that after you've been running it for 16 years or however many years it's been, all of a sudden you're in a new one. It takes some time to get used to it. And who knows what was going through his head. He might've been thinking about 2-minute stuff that was different from what he had done in New England and processing and anything like that could have been the reason. We remember Rodgers, how many timeouts did he take, or delay of games did he get last year because he was just kind of grinding through some of the offense?
Yeah, that's, I mean, and to me, Tom, I couldn't imagine a more different offense. Now, obviously, from McCarthy to LaFleur, I mean, it was word-based, long play call, sure, but there was, I mean, still roots of West Coast, where New England to Arians is so different.
Yeah.
And it's not just, and I would imagine, even if it's words or numbers, whatever that may be, but, like, the style is to test teams down the field. And again, is that when, and I think, Todd, that truly shows the as we start this with the injuries, the collective issues in Tampa Bay. So it's not just Brady and a new offense, but also those great weapons, if you will, have not been healthy. OJ Howard's done for the year. We've run through all these injuries. I mean, he just hasn't had anyone to build continuity with, really, at any point.
Yeah, and so that's not a great thing when you're trying to play in a new offense and you're forcing the ball in some places where you need your guys to help you out a little bit. And he's probably not getting as much of that help as he could use. I mean, they are running the ball pretty well. Ronald Jones has been a nice find for them. And had a really nice day against Chicago. And they're sort of a three-headed monster with Fournette, and then LeSean McCoy's kind of their third down back. So they probably just need to kind of reevaluate what they're doing and where they are. And I wouldn't be surprised if they've made some changes over this 10-day period to try to get Brady going.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what that would be. And maybe some of that change would have to do with, you know, one injury that is concerning, I guess, for the Packers is the quadriceps injury suffered by Kevin King on Monday night. He did not finish the game coming out of the half. He has not participated in practices as we record this. We have seen him, which is probably a good sign. But, look, Kevin King's been playing well. Soft tissue things have been, you know, his kind of bugaboo, if you will, for the last few years outside
his
of the
whole career, really.
Yeah, his whole career. So what is – I mean, let's just assume Godwin and Evans play, however they're limited physically. That's still – does that mean Jair Alexander kind of matches Evans and you hope – Josh Jackson and the coverage can roll with Godwin? What kind of issue maybe does that present the Packers back end if King is indeed, you know, done for the week?
Yeah, I don't know if I would put Alexander on Godwin or Evans. It's, you know, Evans is a big guy, and they're going to need to have someone with some size over there and probably have to double him. But, you know, the thing they have to figure out is, yeah, how do they play this? I don't think you move Chandon Sullivan outside. I think you got to leave him in the slot. That's where he plays well. That's his, you know, that's his niche. So then you have to figure out, do you put Josh Jackson in there or Kadar Holman, or is there another option? I don't know, Will Redmond, maybe put Will Redmond on Evans and let him kind of just bang the crap out of him. I don't know. I'm interested to see how they do that.
Can they, is that one of those, Tom, do you think though, with Pettine's history that it truly is next man up? We've seen that with him. I mean, it would seem that it would be Josh Jackson.
I would say it could be, you know, sometimes it has been Holman. I think it's really dependent on the matchup. And Jackson would give you the size against Evans, but I'd be really worried about that speed matchup, about Jackson being able to keep up. He'd need a lot of help. And maybe that's what they do. Maybe they just take Evans out of the game and, you know, figure that they'll control Gronkowski, who doesn't look like he can run anymore. He can still get open some, but he's not the dangerous guy he was. And then, you know, you have Alexander to handle Godwin. Maybe that's how you do it.
Yeah, Gronkowski, I think, Tom, that was more of a I don't want to call it. I mean, look, he had two catches for 30 yards. He set up, put the Bucs in good position. I think that's what it is, though. I think it's Rob Gronkowski can get you one play, one or two plays. And I think if you're the Packers, you just hope that doesn't come when it matters. Because he looks every bit the part of a guy who was retired last year, probably for good reason.
Yeah, he looks like Jimmy Graham to some degree. You know, he's going to make some plays across the middle or in the end zone, some red zone plays, but he's not, you know, O.J. Howard is going to keep the chains going and stretch the field a little bit, but I don't think that Gronkowski can do that anymore.
Right. The now to flip it around, you know, of course, Aaron Rodgers has gotten a lot of the attention, rightfully so, for the pace he is on. But Tom, I think for me, what's fascinating about this Packers offense coming in is its rushing attack against what Tampa does with its front seven. And real quick, this is up over at PackersNews.com. It is, I guess it's been a long time since I've seen such a strength versus strength kind of deal here, Tom. I mean, there's the raw numbers, which is Packers number five in rush offense, Tampa number one. They've been number one since last year. But even down to, like, the finer points, so the Packers, for instance, Tom, one of the best, if not the best team, rushing on first and 10, you know, getting almost 7 yards a carry. Well, Tampa's the best at defending first down rushes, allowing less than three. The Packers are one of the best teams running off the left side, whether it's off, you know, left end or off Bakhtiari, Elton Jenkins. Well, conversely, Tampa Bay is one of the best defending on the left side. If that's like, and I know Vita Vey, their big nose tackle is going to be out. But I mean, to me, Tom, all of this stuff that works for the Packers and Rodgers is based off this run game.
Yeah.
And Tampa is so good at it. I mean, I'm really fascinated to see if they can slow this Packers offense down. Pass offense by stopping the run, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so losing Vita Vey is huge because that guy just eats up double teams and he allows Levante David and Devin White to just crash down in the run game. So that'll be a little bit different for them. But, you know, they still got Ndamukong Suh up there. And the other thing, you know, someone brought this up to me, a scout I've known for a long time, and we were just talking, and he was like, what happens if their run offense gets shut down and they fall behind? You know, do they have the ability with Davante Adams and then a bunch of guys to really come back? They're always in a position of strength because they can run the ball. But if all of a sudden they can't, you know, you're going to have to win some games throwing it. And can they do that with just Davante Adams and, you know, some guys who aren't really that proven, especially with Alan Lazard out?
Yeah, it's and what's been interesting, Tom, was, you know, after that great day against Detroit, you know, less than 100 yards as a team rushing against New Orleans. They made an effort. 88 yards rushing against Atlanta. I think they had made an effort to stop the run. Matt LaFleur stuck with it, though. And so for his part, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, they handed it off 30-plus times. So I guess that you're right. That'll be interesting to see if they're getting 2.5 yards a pop or 3.5. Like, do they still do it 30 times?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or because Adams is back, is it like, well, this guy is going to bail us out on 3rd and 6?
Well, this is where the defense comes into play. You know, this has got to be one of those games where they can't give up the first drive, a 12-play, 75-yard drive for a touchdown. They can't give up touchdowns on the first two possessions. They really have to keep the offense in a position where it can do both, where it can run and pass. They get behind early, then, you know, it's all in Tampa's hands. So I think the defense plays a very big role in how the offense will succeed this week.
Well, to piggyback off of that, what do you make of this Tampa offensive line and that Packers front seven? I mean, you mentioned the run game a little bit, although, you know, the Packers statistically, Tom, I think look pretty good against the run, but I guess I'd argue that some of that is the fact of what we said. They've played from ahead.
Yeah, nobody runs on them anymore because they're always behind.
Right. So, look, Tampa still wants to throw the ball and push the ball. So I don't really know, you know, if they're just going to hand it off to Ronald Jones as often. I mean, they are the 25th ranked rush offense. They just don't do a ton of it, I guess, to say like, oh, this is what they're going to do. So is it about Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith finally rediscovering quarterback pressures and Kenny Clark? I mean, it feels like if you can get to Brady and follow the Bears blueprint, you know, he might turn it over or make a mistake. And that can be that key possession change that this Packers defense has seemed to get so far.
Yeah. Well, we're going to finally see what they look like with Kenny Clark. So when he got hurt, they weren't playing that great, but you know, what did he play? 12 snaps. So it was early in the game and Minnesota was probably running a lot on scouted stuff. And then we haven't seen him since. And during that time, Kingsley Kiki has improved and shown a little pass rush. Za'Darius Smith had a little bit of a breakout against Atlanta. And Rashawn Gary has had a couple of moments. So now they put it together, and what does that equal? That's kind of what we're going to find out, is whether Kenny Clark takes some double teams away from Za'Darius Smith or allows, you know, Kiki to get some nice rushes. I'm interested to see that. And, you know, Clark will help their run defense. But they're still, you know, they're still young at inside linebacker, and that's going to always be something that teams are going to try to exploit. So I would not be surprised if Tampa really tries to establish the run early.
It's funny, Tom, because we've been saying that these last few weeks, and yet I don't know if New Orleans or Atlanta did it, but then again, despite Tampa's 3-2 record, I do think they're a better team than those other squads, clearly in Atlanta, with Dan Quinn being fired. So before we do some house cleaning stuff here, Tom, I am curious your thoughts on what the game means, in that we have talked about this front-loaded divisional NFC schedule.
Yeah.
Obviously at 4-0, look, they can lose a game to a non-division opponent. It's not the end of the world, clearly, even if Seattle were to win. I mean, there's still enough time for that to shake out. However, considering Tampa's defense and what they can do offensively, would you take anything more out of it, win or lose? Or is it strictly just how did they play regardless of outcome?
Yeah, well, the way I look at it is it's an opportunity. And so they're 4-0. They're playing really good. And then they have yet another NFC game in front of them. And they have a chance to build some capital on this. And you really got to take advantage of it. I mean, if you're going to lose a road game in this two-game road trip, you want to lose it to Houston and not to Tampa Bay. So they have to take this game very seriously, which they will. But I think the key to winning it is that they're going to have to stay ahead of their opponents, of the Rams, of the Seahawks, maybe the Saints, maybe the Buccaneers, who knows. You know, the Rams are 4-0 in the conference, the Seahawks are 3-0, and the Packers are 4-0. So with a chance to go to a 5-0, I think that's where this game, the most importance is with this game. I mean, they're due for a bad game. It's going to happen. But can they still win if they're not playing that well?
And not to necessarily remind fans, but the Packers clunkers from a year ago came on road trips. You know, two teams with one in Phillip Rivers, who I thought was ready to play turkey bowls, which he looks like he is now. And he was able to do something against them. And obviously we know what happened in San Francisco a few times. So, you know, maybe there's something to that as well to be prepared for. Also, Tom, I can't let Packers fans think the Bears aren't a factor here. They're also 4-0 in the conference. Their one loss coming to the Colts, who the Packers will visit, you know, down the line here. I just think the Foles thing, when they made that decision, when they did, was the right call. And for whatever reason, Matt Nagy's offenses seem to get, I don't want to say the better of, because they haven't won, but they seem to move the ball against Mike Pettine's defenses. So I think the Bears are going to hang around. And if we get to late November, those games may matter a bunch too. Tiebreaker.
Yeah. I mean, they got to watch that, you know, they have to keep an eye on the Bears who, you know, in general, I don't think they're as talented a team, but we know that their defense can cause, in a one game situation, their defense can cause a lot of problems. And, you know, we've seen what Khalil Mack can do to them. So, yeah, that, as much as you know, people want to make fun of the Bears, I wouldn't write them off.
Right. So there are some interesting, for our listeners who love to just dive into roster stuff and cap stuff and all those types of things, this part is for you. The Packers head into this Sunday game. As we record this, Tom, they only have 50 men on their 53-person roster. Kamal Martin, the rookie inside linebacker, and Equanimeous St. Brown, the third-year wide receiver. They are on injured reserve, but they have begun practicing. It has started the clock on them. They can be added to the 53-person roster anytime between right when we post this to 2.5 weeks from now. So I guess I'm going to start with the 50-man, Tom. Montrevious Adams didn't practice today. I'm wondering if this just means Billy Winn is going to get the John Lovett promotion and be signed to the 53 for the weekend, because he cannot be shuffled up for a third time. What do you make of the three empty roster spots? That seems so very unlike Brian Gutekunst.
Yeah. So I think because they're not a team that's really decimated by injuries, and they've got all this leeway with the practice squad, that they haven't really had to have 53 guys on the roster, and it saved them a little bit of cap money. I think it's given them options too. So like you said, you know, maybe Kamal Martin's not ready this week, and I don't think he will be. So maybe you do put Billy Winn in there. And, you know, it's sort of what they did with Reggie Begelton. You know, they signed him because they had a spot open. Then they cut him on Monday and re-signed him to the practice squad. And so maybe they do the same thing with Billy Winn. They sign him and then they let him go. Or, you know, I don't know what other prospects, Willington Prevlion, if, and this is all assuming that Montrevious Adams can't play. We don't know what the injury is or how serious it is, but they're just playing around with those two spots. And, you know, as you wrote, it's given them just a little bit of flexibility to do some things.
Yeah, it's definitely, it is so interesting because Brian, I don't know when we'll get to talk to him again, but, he has always maintained, Tom, in any conversation, on or off the record, that he wants the most players all the time. So even, who knows, though, maybe saving, as you said, a couple weeks worth of salary. I don't know. I don't know how fans want to read into that, whether it's stashing a couple grand because they have no fans, because they think they need, you know, 100 grand for David Bakhtiari later.
Well, every dollar counts.
Right. So I will ask, you know, Martin, you're right, Tom. I don't know if a guy can go from knee surgery to three practices or four and then playing. That may not be the case for Academia St. Brown. We don't really know what the injury to the knee was.
Yeah. It certainly wasn't, you know, it seemed like it was something that was just nagging him. And he's been around. I mean, he's been around more than Martin was, or he got there sooner. And so I agree with you. I think it's possible he's got a better chance of being available. But, you know, do they need him? At this point, what can he offer on Sunday? I don't know.
Well, that was kind of the question. I mean, there's still, I think, let me put the fan Twitter Reddit hat on, Tom. And I think there's people who, they do remember some of those big catch and runs from late in the year under Joe Philbin in 2018. Gotcha, that seems like a lifetime ago. But considering the way this offense has been moving, how open these guys have been, is it out of the realm of possibility to think that if he was up and active, he could catch three balls for 65 yards?
Well, anything's possible. But I think if he's up, he's got to play. I think he's more talented than Darius Shepherd, and he's more talented than Malik Taylor as a receiver. So at some point, you got to figure out how to get him involved. You know, if he doesn't stay healthy, then it doesn't matter. But you have to – he's a big receiver who can get down the field. And you don't find a lot of those guys. And the way that LaFleur has gotten guys involved, whether it's Sternberger or Tanyan or Tyler Irvin or whoever, he's going to find some way to use those guys. So maybe they do just, you know, activate him and find a role where he can get him, like you said, three catches. Maybe it's not 60 yards, but maybe it's 40 and a couple first downs, you know, something like that.
I'm such a nerd with this stuff because this practice squad thing just fascinates me now, Tom, and the way this offense is moving is interesting. You tweeted something out when the Packers signed an undrafted rookie out of Indiana State, Dominique Daphne, 6'2", 243, played a bunch of different positions there. But at that point, and then they ended up adding another receiver. So they now have 1, 2, 3, 4 wide receivers on the practice squad.
Yeah.
Two tight ends who are undrafted rookies, but who had played, you know, kind of hybrid-y roles. Obviously, again, these are all undrafted guys, other than Robert Foster, the guy from Buffalo, which I'm actually surprised he hasn't gotten a shot yet. What do you make of and Dexter Williams, the running back, is still on the practice squad as well. What do you kind of make of this collection of undrafted rookie tight end receivers on the PS? Begelton and Foster are probably the two outliers as being vets, but like, I don't know. What is there anything to it? What does it interest you at all, considering how they can move these guys up and down at any point?
Yeah, I think what it says to me is that some of these other positions that they've got, they feel pretty comfortable with those guys. And at wide receiver, they're taking a look at a lot of different guys. They're trying to build up their scouting, I guess it would be scouting book on some of these guys. They have guys who can come in and play at certain positions. You know, Billy Wynn can help them in defensive line, so can Willington Prelion. Dexter Williams could help them at running back, so they're okay there. Begelton could help them at wide receiver if they need him. Dejon Harris played at inside linebacker. So I think they're using those spots to just think about the future and think about wide receivers. You know, maybe they can find a Malik Taylor there. And why not? You know, see what's out there, and you get a chance to bring these guys in and work them for a while.
One last thing on the practice squad, and it relates to having so many receivers and tight ends. They have worked out, I don't know how many kickers at this point, Tom. And the reason I bring this up is because more teams have added the practice squad kicker. More teams are protecting that practice squad kicker, at least as long as they can. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know why they're doing it, but I guess to me, Tom, operationally, if Mason Crosby tests positive for COVID on Saturday, I mean, first of all, this isn't like pre-pandemic. They can't just bring Sergio Tavecchio down to Tampa and have him kick. I mean, the rules won't allow it. That's the case even if Mason Crosby tests positive for COVID on a Wednesday, they won't be able to have Sergio or whoever they were. So I guess I'm wondering why the workouts, if you're not actually going to sign, and maybe they're terrible. Maybe the workouts are so bad to like, we can't sign a guy. But like, what do you make of the decisions to work these guys out, but then not actually make the effort to sign them because the way the rule is now, it's.
I think part of it is that Crosby's already tested positive for coronavirus. So that, as far as we know, yeah, I believe he told us that he did.
Yeah. In the spring. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, when he reported to camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so maybe the feeling is that it's unlikely that's going to happen. I think they say it's like a 3-month period where you're kind of safe from not getting it again. And maybe they're just playing the odds that way and figuring that if he gets hurt in a game, you know, they're screwed anyways. There's nothing they can do about it if he's hurt in a game. If he comes up with a hamstring pull in practice on Friday or Saturday, I mean, they've been known to fly guys in if they have to. They did it with J.K. Scott that 1 year when I believe his wife was pregnant. So I think that's the thinking, is probably that they're not as worried about the COVID with him as they are about like an injury. And so that's why they're building up their emergency list.
But they can't, I mean, with the new rules, Tom, they can't bring someone in and just sign them. They have to go through the waiting period and the testing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, that's a good point.
Whereas if the guy's on your practice squad and he's being like, there's literally no, like, he would travel with you to the game if something were to happen. I guess that's why I'm just interested in like the mechanics of it, but also the fact that they're not devoting, I don't know. It feels like they're worried about something, because why continue to work out kickers, but yet they don't actually sign any of them? I don't know. It's the weirdest thing. It's just,
well, maybe like you said, they're terrible, and that they just as soon go with J.K. Scott.
Yeah.
That he's got more talent than that. I don't know, but you raise a good point.
It's interesting. I had asked, J.K. Scott had an illness going into that Atlanta game, and I had asked Sean Menenga, you know, what would happen if he gets hurt. And he's like, oh, well, we have a couple guys who work on their punts, and of course he's not going to say who. And I really wanted him to say he had guys who could drop kick, Tom. And he's like, Mason can drop kick. But no, they don't have like a, you know, McMahon used to do it. You know, they don't really have any, I don't know. I'm looking for something out of special teams to be interesting, Tom. They're too fundamentally sound.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. Tyler Irvin's been hurt. He's missed practice the last few weeks. That's a big one, I guess. Josh Jackson was the first one up when he got hurt against Detroit to punt return. Chandon Sullivan has kick return experience. We saw him do that last year. So that'll be something to watch Sunday as well, especially in the punt return game, if it is Josh Jackson getting the call while also having to play corner. So that could be an interesting development on special teams Sunday in Tampa Bay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. So we will, Tom and I, we will get to you late Sunday night. It is not prime time, the first one in a while. So we will hope to get this Green 19 post-game podcast up before, you know, dawn. Monday afternoon, it should be a Monday morning, so it should be a good one, Tom. Looking forward to it. It's you know, when Tom Brady signed in Tampa Bay and then the schedule came out, I think this was one of those where it was circled on the calendar for networks, fans, even if the players really don't seem to care. But it is Brady Rodgers for whatever it's worth. It doesn't happen very often. So Sunday afternoon should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. It should be a pretty decent game, nice and hot. And we'll see if that's a factor too.
Yeah, definitely. So for Tom, I am Jim. Thank you for listening. And be sure to subscribe and download all the apps at jsonline.com/deals, packersnews.com, where you can read us, hear us, see us. I don't know if you want – nah, you want to see us. I mean, we're not – we have some information. Maybe, yeah. I don't know how often you want to be looking at me, but, well, whatever. You can see us there too. So anyway, for Tom, I am Jim. We will talk to you guys soon.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.